So you have this 47% that don't pay taxes. And these people are never going to vote for me. And when I talk about these people who don't pay taxes, I don't mean senior citizens. All right? And I don't mean members of our armed services. And I don't mean Southern whites. Okay, what I mean is, and real quick, no one is recording this, correct? No? Okay, it's very important that no one records this. Okay, good. Because I'm about to say who these people are, and I would prefer to not have that on tape. Sorry, sir, is that a camera on the table pointing right at me? Okay, great. All right. Now, when I say these people, I mean black people.
Bruce on the radio, welcome back. We are back 1 minute after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is a pleasure to be back. Hope you guys had a wondrous weekend. It was eventful. On my end, probably just because of news and football and things like that. By the way, Saturday was boring as all hell. Saturday was boring. I got a new vice, and I'll tell you about that in a little bit. I've got a new vice. I'm hooked on it, and I'm probably going to be pissed off when it's over, when I'm done with it. But what I'm going to do is I'm probably just going to go back and do it all over again. I'll tell you about it in the 9 o'clock hour, in the Reese's rant portion of the 9 o'clock hour. Anyway. Reese's rant has to do with football. Football, football, football. And the replacement refs. Now, I have to say one thing about these games that I know no one appears to be talking about. And I'm going to have a different perspective than most people. Trust me, I am. I am loving the longer games because of the replacement refs. I'm loving it. I am loving the bad calls by the replacement refs. I'm loving it. Because this season, remember, until they get it right, until that integrity is upheld, we're just going to have to deal with the wild and zany about football. And what did we have going for us this year coming into this season anyway? There were no really big stories coming into the season. The Giants won last year. We know that the Saints weren't going to be who it is that they were because of, you know, the whole Sean Payton and a Bounty Gate controversy. There were no big stories leading into the season. All I was interested in is just getting back to football in general. There are no big stories here. The biggest stories so far are all about the refs. There's been no controversies. Even Pac-Man Jones, for crying out loud, isn't bugging out. No strippers, no nothing. It's been a kindler, gentler football season. The players aren't bugging out. Sure, there have been a couple of arrests, but they've been quiet. There has to be controversy. That's the whole purpose of this thing. There's got to be those questionable calls. There's got to be those, you know, those did he make it? Or was that a pass interference? Was that holding? We were going to do that anyway. And look, truth be told, when have we ever watched a football game where we weren't pissed off at arrest calls? When have we ever watched it? People act like these replacement refs are beyond the pale. That's bogus. Anybody remember Ed Hockley with the bad call? The guy was receiving death threats. Now, if you don't know who Ed Hockley is, you can't miss him. Older gentleman, real, real diesel kind of guy, well built. Ed Hockley is one of the veterans of the regular referee staff. In the game, he made a bad call. He knew he made a bad call. Was it 2-3 years ago? He got hell for it. I think it was maybe even last year. But I had hell for it. And this guy's a veteran, well-respected referee. I mean, God forbid people know his name. How often do you know people out there who know the ref's name? Ed Hockley is known. And even he has made bad calls before. Anybody want to remember Super Bowl XL with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the bad coin toss? when they had to show a replay on the coin toss? This is nothing new, folks. It's nothing new. We've seen this all before. You can get mad all you want at this, at the replacement refs. Now, I'll admit to one thing. The calls are a little more trivial than the other calls. You know, sometimes they're very hard to call. You know, when the regular refs were there, there were really, really questionable calls. You know, you couldn't really tell. It looked like the ball hit the ground first. Maybe he caught it. Was his hand underneath? Is really not indisputable or disputable evidence of a play. That stuff happens all the time. But you got mistakes that are made and boneheaded mistakes with the regular refs. But these refs, they bring something new. And that means that now the guys have to really, really watch what it is that they do. But you know what you're going to have? See, this is there's one thing you're really, really going to have to do. One or the other. Either people are going to take advantage of the new refs and think that they're not going to know that that particular hold is illegal, or that particular pass interference, you know, is really pass interference, or if they're abiding by the five, you know, the 5 yard rule, you know, cornerbacks versus wide receivers. You know, there are guys who are going to probably try to take advantage of them. They're going to be coaches who know that the, you know, that the refs don't want to make big mistakes and be called on them, so they get bullied by the coaches to make the right call, to throw a flag later than usual. Or there are going to be people out there who are just going to be scared to death. Listen, guys. These refs are screw-ups, man. And every little thing you do is going to be questionable by these guys. We need to play right. We need to get it right. Make sure it's indisputable. Now, I think the latter will happen. I think it will. I think Bill Belichick, during yesterday's Baltimore-New England game, where Baltimore beat New England by 1 point in a razor-thin field goal kick, I think that games like that are going to determine on whether or not people are going to play the right way. I do believe that's going to happen. But these refs, they bring new drama. You aren't going to get really real new drama this year. Probably going to get a couple of close games. You're going to watch the New Orleans Saints completely implode. I'm watching them explode, to be honest with you. They are exploding. They're just horrible right now. Only 3? The Saints? Will they be called the Aints this year? Possibly. I think week 5. If they don't win a game by week 5, they're going to be called the Aints. But this season has some excitement. People are talking about the NFL. They're front page news. Sure, you want to blame it on the refs all you want to, but I don't care about that. The refs aren't getting paid multi-million dollar, you know, contracts. These guys are Division I, Division III refs. Some of them are high school teachers. Think one guy owns a bakery? I don't know who these guys are. But these guys, you know, they're not veterans. They're going to make those mistakes. And I want to watch the play, and I want to see whether or not they get it right or get it wrong, and I like that frustration. I'm a Jets fan, for crying out loud. You know I love frustration. I'm a curmudgeon. This is what I live for. I need that debate. I need that anger. I need that frustration. I live for it. So this is doing nothing but giving me more. And it's making me interested in watching games and teams that I normally wouldn't watch. I'm watching Arizona play, for crying out loud. I'm watching the Carolina Panthers play. I mean, I'm really watching games that mean nothing to me, because I know that these games are much more exciting with replacement referees. And how many overtime games did we have this weekend? It's ridiculous. And everyone's blaming the replacement refs. Of course they're going to get the beef for it. But everybody is angry. Everybody's ticked off. If you're in New England today, oh man, I'm pretty sure those folks over in the sports radio land are calling into those radio shows over like EEI. I know they're going nuts. The refs. They're ticked off. And if you live in New England, and the Jets are 2-1, and New England Patriots are 1-2, I know you went to work today with a serious issue. You probably punched your boss. And I love it. I love every bit of it. I wanted Baltimore to win that game anyway. Even though they're in the AFC, you know, New England's in the AFC East, and I need the Jets to be 2 games up. That's just me. I'm a Jet fan. Get used to it. But these refs, these replacement refs, are the best thing happening right now. The game's not going to get any better if they strike a deal with the NFL. It's not going to get any better. I promise you. I think things aren't going to be anywhere near better. Because people are going to find some way to complain about their record. People are going to say, oh, we should have been undefeated this year. If it weren't for the replacement refs in the first 4 weeks. But I'm loving every bit of it. I say give these guys a shot. Keep them in for another year. Now, I don't know exactly who's going to win the Super Bowl. It's too early to tell, of course. It's too early to even start predicting. But I'm going to tell you, there's one team out there that I'm really, really looking at. Well, because I know it's not going to be the Jets. Most people say, why wouldn't I pick my own team? Well, it's not going to be the Jets. I know that. They got San Francisco next week, and San Francisco just lost, and they're going to put a beating on the Jets. If the Jets win that game, for crying out loud, I will fall down on the ground. I'll probably have a heart attack, massive coronary. But the team to look out for this year, I see it. It's the Houston Texans. They are going to be the team to beat this year. And that whole Peyton Manning experiment, I don't know. I don't know. Denver's really, really starting to look really bad. When you see Eli Manning of the New York Giants throw 3 interceptions in the first half, if not the first quarter of his game, over a week ago, and still come back and win the game, and in Peyton Manning, the elder of the two, throws 3 interceptions in the first half, if not the first quarter of the game, and can't come back and loses to the Atlanta Falcons, yeah, I'm going to say there's a problem brewing. I think it goes without saying. So the Houston Texans right now, they're the team that I'm looking for. They're the team that I'm looking directly at. And I'm looking at them closely this year. Not going to put any money on it. But we'll see in the next couple of weeks. Sally D writes, at this very moment, one of compadres is rubbing the Patriots' loss and talking about the Jets being on Tommy Legend and I guess that's Tommy Legend and company. At the end of the day, the ship will right itself and the Jets will be on the outside looking in once again. Sally D is clearly a New England fan. Hey, look, I'm sorry. I'm in the A. Sally, you and I, look, we can be pals, man. We come to football, so we just have to be mortal enemies, just in that area. Okay? I agree with you. I know New England will right the ship. There's no denying it. Listen, when New England comes to town, I'm the one person, literally, I'm like the little boy, you know, who's about to get a beating from mom for coming in with poor grades. I know mom's going to beat my behind and I'm peeing in my pants when New England comes to town because I know that they are going to get their butts stomped. When the Jets beat the Patriots, let me just put it to you this way. When the Jets beat the Patriots at any given time when they beat the Patriots, in fact, I remember, I believe it was last year, if not the year before, I think the Jets had beaten the first appearance against New England. They shocked them, and then the Jets came out, I think it was at the end of the season, to play them again, and the New England scored like 45 points. The Jets, I believe, had 3 or some junk like that. It was a complete shellacking. I knew what was up. I knew what was up. I didn't have any delusions. I had no delusions whatsoever. New England was going to come back there and put a stomping on the Jets. Nobody wants to get beaten by us. Nobody does. You get beaten by the Jets, man. You know, it's a slap across the face. It's a sucker punch when you get beaten by the Jets. And people don't take that lightly. Nobody. You don't lose to the Jets. This is the reason why I'm a fan. They're the consummate underdogs. They're losers. So when they win, it brings absolute joy to me to watch these bums win a game. I mean, I can go to therapy on you for this one. Like, I could pick any team. There's 32 teams to pick. I chose the Jets. Every time I tell somebody I'm a Jet fan, they look at me like I'm bonkers. What? I thought you were a practical guy. I thought you were pragmatic and thought out. Absolutely not when it comes to my football. I want disillusion. I want uncertainty. I want fear. This is the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. That's what the Jets are all about. Because when you win, you're overexcited, as most Jet fans are. I just get excited at one moment, yeah, and I'm cool for a week. When they lose, miserable. And I live for it. Because I know that if the Jets lose and I'm miserable, and I watch them make mistakes, and Sanchez throws two or three picks, and the defense can't make a tackle, I know that next week I'm going to be a complete curmudgeon, but that's when I'm on my A game. I'm on my A game when I'm pissed off. That's when I'm ready to fight. I'm telling you, you want to put this in perspective? I'm hoping that the Jets lose every game before I have to go to trial. I will be on fire. Can you imagine that? I will be literally so engaged with beating the hell out of somebody, figuratively, in that courtroom. That will be my whole mission. It's like my Jets are losing, I'm mad, I'm angry. That makes me persistent. That keeps me focused. That puts me in plot mode. That's how I work. That's how I operate. That's how I always operate. So trust me, when the Jets went to the AFC Championship game two times in a row, I knew what was happening. There was no way they were going to go to the Super Bowl. I wanted to believe. What the hell? When they were playing Indianapolis Colts, and first or second play from scrimmage, Sanchez throws that 80-yard pass to Braylon Edwards on the sideline and scores a touchdown, and we were in the lead. That was when I knew it was over. There's no way Peyton Manning was sitting there on the sidelines going, did Sanchez just throw an 80-yard touchdown pass on our defense? Somebody's got to die. I know that's what he was thinking. He probably walked up to Dwight Freeney and punched him right in the throat. What the heck was that? That's what I'd have done if I was Peyton Manning. You ain't gonna let these people embarrass us in our home? What are you, crazy? What are you, nuts? Do you understand what game this is? It's the AFC Championship game, and the bum-ass Jets are here. They just scored an 80. This is a momentum in New York. You know we're here to crush them. We're here to crush and destroy the hopes and dreams of 8 million New Yorkers. I just wanted to say that. Replacement refs. I want them here all season. That's all I want people talking about. I want the broadcasters angry. I want the coaches pissed off. I love seeing Bill Belichick run out onto the field and grab that referee, and a referee just ignored him and kept going. Yeah, whatever, Bill. Yeah. Why don't you send it to me on a napkin? Write your complaint on a napkin. And if anybody knows that story, that's the reason why I hate Bill Belichick. Sally, just in case you want to know, New England would have never been on my radar screen as the most hated team in football in my book. My book. I hate them personally. They'd have never been on my radar. Had not for Bill Belichick to resign from the New York Jets after Bill Parcells lost, which already angered me because I'm through with him too. But Bill Parcells, when he walked out that office and he gave the reins to Bill Belichick, and Bill Belichick, a day, it wasn't even a day, resigned on a napkin. No respect. Now, I'm not supposed to give him respect after that. I can't. I can't do it. That's why I'm through with him. Then you go to New England. 2 years later, you win a Super Bowl with them. Six-string quarterback, Drew Bledsoe. Just destroyed me. I'll never be the same again. What do you do? We'll take a break. Let's blame it on Bush.
Approaching Blaine Station, Hope and Change Street. What happened to Guantanamo? What happened to the job? What happened to transparency? It's still as thick as fog. Did you really believe it? You could get us off the ground. Come on, you didn't mean it. You could spread the wealth around. We couldn't read the bills. They had to pass them in a hurry. It must be nice to know.
giving voice to a more broad-based frustration.
My name is John Bechtel. I bring greetings and solidarity from the Communist Party. We are here marching side by side. We'll sleep here.
The message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place. The focus is on Wall Street, and justifiably so. And God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming. It's young. It's spontaneous. It's focused. And it's going to be effective.
Here we have a group of people in a democratic way, not hurting anybody, saying they fed up, they're angry, and that somebody should be doing something. I cannot possibly see anything more American than it.
My message is, your presence is making a difference. You're exercising the right every American holds most dear, the right of freedom of expression.
The American Nazi Party is urging followers to get involved. The Socialist Party, USA, is also asking its supporters to stand with the protesters. And not to be outdone, Communist Party USA is telling members to be a part of the movement at every level.
The man who is the Frank in the Dodd-Frank Wall Street reform legislation. Congressman Frank, thanks very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Do you believe that the Occupy Wall Street movement is changing the democratic strategic consideration of Wall Street and economic populism broadly? Do you think it's lit a fire under the Democrats at all?
Rachel, I do have to say some of us have been trying to do this for a while. Secondly, I will say this, I hope they will.
I understand the frustrations that are being expressed in those protests. In some ways, they're not that different from some of the protests that we saw coming from the Tea Party.
Horrible sounds. It has been a year since the Occupy Wall Street has been with us, and now they are dead. It is over. It's a wrap. Literally, they're nothing more than a street gang that barely people pay attention to. Barely anybody pays attention to. 29 minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio, bottom of the hour on blogtalkradio.com. Now, I know Sally D got some beef after my my little tirade about New England. So Sally D joins us on Reese on the Radio. Do you want to discuss the game?
Man.
Do you want to discuss the game last night or what?
I don't have my radio voice. My son managed to get me sick. But let's just let's back up a little bit here about the Jets Patriots thing. I'm not going to turn this into a sports radio conversation. But I'm going to tell you this.
Talk about everything here. Come on, Sally. Don't worry about that.
I think you're playing a little when you say you're enjoying this, because to me, the issue I have with this replacement ref scenario, this could very well, if this goes on for another game or two, turn this season into a questionable season, because there have been so many games that have had so many terrible calls. If at the end of the day somebody wins a championship and people go back and say, yeah, but we had the replacement refs for five games here, I'd hate to see that. So that's the only issue I have with this whole scenario. You could look at it like it's a bit of a comedic tragedy, but you know these guys are out there putting their their bodies on the line. It's not a game where it's a golf game. You know these guys can get injured, they get hurt, and these guys are just blowing it all over the place.
But wait a minute,
hold on. The Patriots lost. That's another thing. I think a bad call here or there for both teams. Anybody could have lost that, but just in general, you can't tell me you're really enjoying this.
Listen to me. I am being 100% sincere, Sally, when I say that I am enjoying every bit of this. But here's why. Let me explain to you why. Now, I got into football late. Unlike a lot of my male friends, I got into football way late into my life. I think, and I want to say roughly about 18, 19 years old was when I got into football. In fact, I've talked about this on the air before. Derek the Bounty Hunter, who's my old friend when I was 19, I met Derek, when I was 19, he was 17. He played high school football, and he explained the game of football to me literally with sticks and rocks in the dirt at a playground. He broke the whole game down to me when I was 19 years old. He explained how to play the game, how to set up the defense, what they were there for. Explained the entire game to me when I was 19 years old. And I fell in love with the sport the way he broke it down to me. That's how he and I became best friends, when he explained football to me. Now, that being said, that's 1989, okay? That's 88, in fact. 1988, that summer, is when Derek taught me about football. Do you remember what happened the year before 1988?
Was that the strike?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. We had replacement players.
Yep.
Okay? So there's no asterisk on the Redskins winning that Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know, and maybe this should be, though. I mean, that year was just a total – that was craziness. I mean, there was no semblance of an NFL quality kind of play there.
True, but look at the damage that happens if you do put an asterisk on that game. Now, I don't care about the quote-unquote social implications here for that, because here's where the argument's going to be. Who's the MVP of that Super Bowl? Doug Williams.
Yep.
First black quarterback to win a Super Bowl. People would go nuts. So, in essence, what I'm just saying is replacement refs versus replacement players, my argument's going to be, hey, it's still the game. You may not get a flag where you like it, but that happens. I mean, you have to agree with me that, when I brought up the Ed Hockley scenario, Ed Hockley is well known. And look at that game that he botched. I think it was a Monday night game.
Sure.
Yeah, where he botched a call. Who was that game against?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't remember. But I know I do remember the big fervor over it.
It was either Denver or Chicago, or it was Denver versus Chicago. But it was one of those teams were definitely in the game. But I'll never forget the backlash. I mean, Ed Hockley, one of the veterans in the referee game, this guy was getting death threats, and he was apologizing.
Yep.
He was apologizing everywhere.
But if the one thing I don't want to see is players starting to play the game differently, people getting hurt because of it. It is possible that could happen. If people aren't getting the calls on a field where they think people are coming from the outside, you could see quarterbacks getting hurt. A lot of things can happen. So let's just hope that this thing blows over and, sooner or later it gets resolved. I don't know all the issues from the referee side, but, I'm hoping. I'm a fan, so I kind of hope it resolves itself. But
well, the referee.
The only thing I want to hear about. We got a lot going on down here in Massachusetts. I bet you're aware.
Well, tell me. I mean, well, you're talking about the election-wise, or are you just talking about the game
you
itself?
The latest Liz Warren and Scott Brown election?
Say again?
Have you heard the latest with the Scott Warren, Liz Warren and Scott Brown election?
No, what's the latest?
So she was on the radio today, and I was listening to the interview in one of the you were in Boston for a while. You know Jim Browdy, right?
Sure.
Okay, so he had asked her if she somebody had called in, and I think this call was a plant, because they said something along the lines, I think I'm going to open a can of worms by saying this, but she's not registered with the bar.
Right. I do know the story.
Jim Browdy thought it might have been. It sounded to me like he was actually really caught off guard, and he said, "Oh, we're hearing some guy just said you're not a member of the bar anymore. I think it was in New Jersey, and you never were in Boston." And that's not true, right? And she said, "No, I'm not." And to make a long story short, the issue is that apparently she litigated some case for a major corporation.
Travelers.
Where, and Scott Brown brought this up in the debate about this asbestos, and a bunch of people were hurt over this asbestos issue.
And she was co-counsel for the company Travelers.
That's right.
And she worked for them, and she apparently, according to Scott Brown, that she cheated. I was going to talk about this, but I'm glad you brought it up. Scott Brown brought it up. Scott Brown,
this woman's a fraud,
but
she takes it to a whole new level. I'll let you finish the thought, because some of the people may not know the whole story. Go ahead.
Yeah. The bottom line is that during the debate that happened last week between Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren, near the end of the debate, he brought up the fact that Elizabeth Warren claims that she's fighting for the little guy, but she defended Travelers in this asbestos case. And the quote-unquote little guy lost out on these people lost out of a whole bunch of money because, of course, she defended the corporation and the people lost. And she got paid somewhere upwards of $225,000 to $250,000 for her services. But in essence, she was practicing law in Massachusetts, but she's only registered in Texas and New Jersey with the Bar Association to practice law. But she indeed was practicing law out of her Massachusetts office. In fact, the website that I have up now, excuse me, who has up the story, because I was looking at it today, in fact, it's called Legal Insurrection, has the information that has all the documents that say that she was indeed working as an attorney for this case, brief for the petitioners. Elizabeth Warren, of counsel, Elizabeth Warren at the top of the list. Brief of AARP and amicus curiae in support of the petitioners. She's listed as, I think, the sixth person on the list, above Leo Gottlieb, professor at law. And this was filed in Washington, D.C. She also says Elizabeth Warren, Leo Gottlieb, professor at law at Cambridge, Massachusetts. So they've got all of this documentation of her being a counsel at 1575 Massachusetts Avenue in Cambridge, where she is not on any particular list on the Bar Association in that state. She is not.
So I got to tell you, so as this interview kicked off, I can't stand the woman's voice, but as the interview kicked off, I remember thinking to myself, listen to the interview, because this is an opportunity for her to trip herself up, because I'm trying to find some kind of return on this thing. And I'm like, you know, every time someone like her who's got enough – she's always covering something and not answering questions. I thought to myself, well, you never know. This might be an opportunity where she trips herself up and looks really bad. And when you listen to the interview, it's clear that it's almost like as the words came out of her mouth, you could almost feel that she knew she just said something she shouldn't have said. The reason is Massachusetts is one of the few states that does not allow you – to practice law unless you're licensed. You can't, I guess in certain states you can go off a license because if they take you on board.
Right.
But not in Massachusetts. You have to be licensed in Mass to be taken on and to be able to litigate the case. This is huge. This all plays out as it's being touted.
Right.
You know, not only is it, I think at this point if she wins the election, that I got to get out of the state, period. But
yeah, that's beyond
that.
beyond the shadow of a doubt. In fact, here, Legal Insurrection writes these several bullet points. Number four, it says, if Warren was practicing law from her Cambridge office, she violated Massachusetts law. In order to practice law in Massachusetts, particularly from a Massachusetts office, one needs to be admitted to the Massachusetts bar, which Warren has never been. There is no general exception from licensing requirements for law professors. And
correct.
All of this that I read earlier today, I said to myself, this is bizarre, because Legal Insurrection, they even went so far as to call several offices in Massachusetts to find out whether or not she was listed anywhere. to practice law. They, in fact, the person that, this reporter says they spoke to, let me give the writer their credit, excuse me, this was written by William Jacobson, who wrote this, said that when they got one person on the phone, they came back and said no, but when they heard the question and then came back with a no, the person on the phone knew who Elizabeth Warren was, but even they said, well, that's odd. And she went and said, wait a minute, hold on. Let me get somebody else. So she went to another person, and they both scoured their records. So it actually started to grow inside the office that he called, and they started even looking up. They were going, no, there's no way that she's not registered. Went and looked further, and sure enough, no registry.
What about this case now, though? This case where I think it was a $500 million settlement that never got paid out, but does that not now possibly invalidate that case, and do those people not now have a claim to sue Travelers once again?
They have to sue Travelers once again because, in essence, what counsel did for Travelers was unlawful with the exception of being unethical, but it was absolutely unlawful. And if she is on a law brief as counsel and she was representing him in a legal manner when she's not allowed to practice, that's malfeasance.
This is a
Therefore,
huge story. And
this
is unbelievable. You can't
bring
this stuff
up. It has to go back to trial. Because she doesn't just defraud the bar. She defrauds the court. She defrauded
her
the victims. She defrauded her clients.
Correct. And, you know, all of these people, and they brought up the point that she was brought in to do exactly what was done, which is Travelers got off easy, and they set it up in such a way that this thing just played out over time to the point where they never paid out a dime. And now you find out this woman's not even legally practicing law, and she's running for the Senate with this other question of her being Indian. This is just unbelievable. If this election isn't over as of today, I gotta get out of here. I can't say it enough because that just tells you that people could care less. Who votes for this woman? I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. If I found out Scott Brown was a fraud, I probably wouldn't vote for Warren, but I wouldn't vote.
I agree.
Who votes for this woman now?
This is the paragraph I was talking about. William Jacobson writes, he said, I confirm with the Massachusetts Board of Bar Overseers by telephone that Warren has never been admitted to practice in Massachusetts. I had two conversations with the person responsible for verifying attorney status. In the first conversation, the person indicated she did not see an entry for Warren in the computer database, but she wanted to double check. I spoke with her again several hours later, and she indicated to me that she checked their files and also had spoken with another person in the office, and there was no record of Warren having been admitted to practice in Massachusetts. Warren's own listing of her bar admissions is consistent with not being licensed in Massachusetts. In a June 2008 CV, Warren listed only Texas and New Jersey. The Warren's Texas bar information indicates she is not eligible to be licensed in Texas, but does not indicate when she went on that inactive status. Consistent with our finding that Warren was not admitted in Massachusetts, Warren listed only one other place of admission on her Texas record, and that is New Jersey.
Yeah,
and she resigned to practice law in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So she's not licensed to practice law
anywhere.
Correct.
Resigned without prejudice. Current status, New Jersey attorney detail.
Look at that.
She resigned without prejudice, so she resigned on her own reconnaissance. So she's not licensed to practice and law in any state.
Correct.
Now, is this going to be a headline in the book? It's got to be a headline in the book.
It better be. Whoa. I mean, here's a woman lying about her Indian... about her Indian descent, you know.
And now practicing law without a license.
She's defrauding everybody.
Well, I can tell you guys this. There's a liberal Talkmeister during the midday on 96.9. I don't know if you know him or not. His name's Doug Meehan. He used to do traffic and weather reports at Fox 25 for a while. Likeable guy, but he's definitely a left-leaning guy.
Sure.
And so generally when he comes on, what you know you're going to hear is kind of a left-leaning spin the most things. Well, he came on today, and his big thing was he was hammering her. He was hammering her, you know, up and down, saying, you know, all I want. And he made a really good, which was fascinating. At the end of the interview, they asked her what her favorite TV show was. And I guess this TV show, I can't think of the name of it because I don't really watch a lot of TV these days, but there's a TV show out there that she liked, and she nailed it. She said, oh, my favorite TV show is
what's her favorite show?
I couldn't think, I don't know. It has something to do with terrorism and it's
Homeland.
Some kind of a really popular show right now. I don't really watch a lot of that television. But Homeland
with Claire Danes.
That's correct. That was what it was. And so she said immediately, that's easy. She said, Homeland. And I laughed because it was literally the only question she answered directly in the entire interview. And to his credit, he was nailing her on that. He said, you know, this is the only question I've heard this woman answer. You know, so you have a lot of people here that are left-leaning, but they just cannot stomach this woman. And I just don't know who's left that could. If this,
but I'll tell you this. You want to laugh, Sal, and I'm going to bring Dennis in a second. You want to laugh. 2 weeks ago, I heard that Elizabeth Warren was ahead 5 points in the polls in Massachusetts. I was stunned at that. And that was that was just after the Cherokee Indian thing had started to die down. Now I want to get Dennis' perspective on it because he's up there in the Commonwealth with you. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So
the tom-toms are a pounding for Lia Wather. Mumbles came out for her.
I love that. You're Dennis, he called a Lia Wather.
A Lia Wather.
I love it. Now wait a minute.
In the interest of full disclosure, I stole it from Howie.
Oh, did you? I love it.
From his columns.
I love Howie Carr. But
I love her response to guys though. Every time they ask her why she did it, she says, "I can't deny who I am." It just kills me.
She came out and said again in his article in Today's Herald she's doubling up on her Indian heritage. She's on the defensive again. She says, I know what I know from my family. I didn't check a box to go to college. I didn't check a box to go to law school. The only box I checked was in a directory to help people find me. Yeah. I didn't take anyone else's job, she said. I think it's pretty clear. The job I got is the job I got because of my teaching, my Oklahoma accent, of my teaching qualifications.
Not so much that
she was pressed on why she didn't release her personnel records to prove she didn't gain from her self-identification would only say she's proud of her heritage.
She doesn't even know what it is.
Regardless of where you stand with affirmative action, doesn't this just put a fine point on why this upsets so many people? I mean,
about the asbestos case. She said, Scott Brown jumping in on this has really crossed the line. What line?
Exposing her?
Balls this woman has. Did she get them from George Soros, who was financing her?
She made the claim that Scott Brown was using the pain of these victims to make a political stance. And she tried to sell that today on the radio, and it was absolutely nobody's doing it. It was just you listen to this woman, and it sounds like everything she says is a half-truth. There's nothing genuine about a single thing she says.
And then she was asked why she stopped listing herself after she was hired at Harvard Law. She says, quote, nothing happened from the directory, and I just thought this doesn't make any sense, unquote.
You know what? No,
everything that comes out of Lia Wather, I mean, you know, I'm getting pains in my chest right now because Pinocchio's nose is poking me in the gut, you know?
here's my question to you guys, though. You know, that, Sal, you made a very, very valid point. It's like, you know, look, it's like if anybody votes for this woman in Massachusetts, I mean, now's the time to leave, because for them, is literally there's nothing ethical. I mean, it would be furthest from honest for you to actually vote for this woman when you know that she, aside from the whole lying about her heritage, but just that this woman has literally gamed the system, and that liberals in Massachusetts would outright vote for her anyway, knowing that she was a liar and a defrauder. It would say so much about the region. It would say so much about Massachusetts, just ethically, that you would have to say to yourself, I got to get the hell out of here. Do you really
Maurice,
think?
Were you aware of what happened at the Democrat State Convention?
What, in Boston?
No, the Democrat State Convention.
Oh, the Democrat State
Convention? I don't know where the hell it was.
No. I didn't know it was underneath the rock. No, I didn't know.
You know, she had an opponent.
It had an opponent?
She had an opponent.
Who's her opponent?
At the state convention. But in Massachusetts, you have to have 15% of the delegates.
Right.
And Democrats are the only ones that have an off-year convention. This is an off-year in Massachusetts because we don't have a gubernatorial election.
Right.
So she had a an opponent, or another woman from Middleton. And Deval pulled every stop he could to make sure she didn't get the 15%, so she didn't.
Yeah, I remember
really?
That.
So the machine was behind Hiawatha.
Yeah, but guys, I mean, Dennis must know this, and Reese, I don't want to get too far afield, but only in
sure.
Massachusetts. There's another election happening here. It's a candidate named Tierney and Tissay, and Tissay is a Republican.
That one.
And, you know, he's kind of a moderate Republican, a really sound guy. So
right.
Tierney's wife was felony convicted, and I can't remember of what. Do you remember, Dennis?
Yeah, because I think she was keeping quiet about her fugitive brother. In the gambling
yeah,
camp.
And there was some payoffs. There was some serious money going on. So she was convicted of a felony. And this is his wife. And so Tierney, the candidate, says, I will debate to say only if you don't raise the issue of my wife's felony conviction.
That's been changed. He admitted now it's okay now to maybe discuss it.
That's
he said he'll have a debate if you don't discuss my wife's felony conviction?
And
correct.
Some of the media went along with it.
And they did, correct. This is, you know, this is Massachusetts in a nutshell. So I think you have two choices. You either you stay here like some, or you just finally come to your senses and you get out.
Yeah, I when I was there in 2008, when I heard the stat that some 2,500 people a year were leaving Massachusetts because it had just gotten so ridiculously liberal. I mean, I was stunned at that. I'd never heard a story like that in my life, for people to be leaving Massachusetts behind it. And it's astonishing to me.
It gets worse.
You know,
it gets worse. To talk about Tierney, he had a fundraiser at the Marriott in Peabody. The Attorney General and our district attorney in Essex County headlined the fundraiser for the incumbent. What the hell does that tell you?
It's just sad for me. I just can't deal with it. I just can't.
Coakley and Blodgett left together ahead of Tierney and his entourage and would not address questions about the congressman's family whose illegal Antigua-based business was busted up at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston. The investigation led to Tierney's brother-in-law, Daniel Ehrman, 62, serving a three-year federal sentence in Miami for racketeering, conspiracy, and illegal gaming. A second brother-in-law, Robert Ehrman, I get bad eyes. 59 is a fugitive from justice. Tierney's wife, 61, who is not with him this morning, remains on supervised probation, having pled guilty in 2010 for helping Robert Ehrman file false tax returns on gambling income prosecutors valued at close to $20 million. She also testified at her brother Daniel's trial.
Wow.
It's just madness here.
I want to see if that's – now, you said, Sal, you said that the interview that she did aired today where she admitted that she didn't practice, that she has no license to practice.
Online.
Yeah, I believe it's online too, but that did air today, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that should be the headline in the papers tomorrow. I mean, I don't understand how it's not.
Well, it'll be in the Herald. Whether it's in the Boston Democrat or not, I don't know, because they're going to downplay it, obviously, for their own reasons.
I love what I'm still going to said in a column. He said since she's in this race because she was drafted by the Politburo that runs the Democrat Party in the state and county and country. Sorry, she wasn't playing well with others in D.C., so this was her consolation prize, a U.S. Senate seat.
Hmm.
Where is Marisa DeFranco when we need her? And DeFranco is the one who ran against her, but was squeezed out by Deval, who put the pressure at the convention.
Yeah, I want to see
And don't forget with Lia Wather, this is the champion of the middle class. She was flipping houses in Oklahoma. She didn't tell you that, did she? Did you know that?
Did you hear about this? I guess one of the houses she flipped put a Iraqi war vet out of a home and
yep.
foreclosed on him, and she knew it. Did you hear about that?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yep.
It was either the vet himself or his direct family. He was disabled. I don't know all the details
on this.
Didn't
he plead to stay in his home, and he was ignored?
Huh.
So, yeah, I think, you know, if tomorrow rolls around and this election takes place and she wins, I just think that just sums up what you're dealing with here. And at that point, I think Republicans don't have a lot to look forward to.
The problem is Mumbles Menino.
A slam dunk.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go take a break. I'm going to get to the top of the hour. We will be back shortly. It is Reese on the Radio. We got more news, more views. We got to get to Michelle Obama, Obama on the View, and plenty of other stuff. We'll be right back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
Yo, man. Hey, you ever go to these bars, right? It's like a nice enough place. Nice enough people, but the bartender thinks he's too fancy, man. You know, I'm like, hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night out. So there's this bar, everybody's like, you gotta go. I'm at the door, what's the password?
I don't know.
We entered through a phone booth or something crazy.
Oh my god, they have the best drinks here. It's amazing.
Ooh, I saw the bartender, he looked like a nice dude. He was pouring a drink with one big-ass ice cube. I'm like, excuse me, sir, could I get a beer? He gave me this look like, why are you even in here? I was confused. Did we start on a bad note? He's wearing waxing his mustache and a lab coat. I'm like, what's the matter? Is beer too boring? He's like, well, this cocktail dates back to pre-Civil War New Orleans.
Wow,
it's real cool, man. Could you suggest something tighter? He hands me this list that was typed up on a typewriter. I ordered something and he lit it on fire. Dude, you've been watching way too much Boardwalk Empire.
For real.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Yeah.
Did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Sup, man?
Did you have to go to college for this?
Same.
I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Keep it simple, sir, because I ain't nothing to muddle with. I got some burlesque dancers I'm trying to cuddle with. So whip some drinks up twice and double it.
Well, have you tried our aviation or Ramos Fizz?
Whoa. Are you even speaking English, Chief? Or rum and coke times two, capiche?
Oh, you must mean our handcrafted Cuba Libre.
If it's quick, bro, you're moving slower than instant
replay.
He dripped a half ounce of something I couldn't pronounce. And by that time, I fly the chicken straight down. I'll speak easy, boss, but I gotta call you bluff. You need to drink, too. Can't be all that, huh? Pour the liquor in and swirl it in a circle. But you're on the things like a Shake Boy commercial. I'll have a beer, guy, whenever you're done mixing. Second thought, boycott. Prohibition.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this?
It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tips. Shoot. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, alright? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Hey, could I get a Sazerac, man? With muddled sage. No? Okay.
Yes, this is a smoked salmon-infused vodka.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
I see some black people looking at me, man. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking bitch, okay? Okay? When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, bitch. Ted Koppel ain't never took this shit from me. Niggas have. So you think I got three guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, it's Mike Wallace. Run!
After the hour right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. We're trying to get Lisa Belkov-Snyder, but she's booked all week. She's the female sports reporter out in Rocky Mountain Radio. We had her on the show a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to get her take on this whole replacement ref thing. You know,
I'm over it.
You're over it? Really? I think it's the most exciting thing.
I'm over them. I want the regular refs to come back. They're calling shit that they shouldn't be calling, and the stuff that they should be calling, they're not calling. And then when they do call something that they should have called, they're calling it the wrong thing.
So anyway, I did a whole monologue about that. I still think it's the greatest thing ever. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is, of course, gave a speech where he's, of course, talking about Israel is going to be eliminated again. So everybody's talking about that. But I want, more importantly, to talk about The View. My favorite biddies over at The View. Now, President Obama is going – he taped an interview today that is going to air tomorrow. And President Obama is going to be there with his wife, Michelle. And they're going to be talking about, you know, nonsense. I do hear that they get into a couple of conversations about the economy, and Elizabeth even questions him. I hear in the report she questions him about his statements about being inside Washington and not being able to change things. You know, change doesn't happen inside Washington. And he gives this off-the-cuff response to it. But this is ABC News Today. Now, look, there is no way in the world that you can say that we live with a fair and balanced media. And when you got two broads on a news program, World News Tonight, talking about the President of the United States, and they sound like this, it's just baffling.
He and Mrs. Obama also sat down with the women of The View, their first time together there. And Barbara Walters is here right now with an exclusive preview. So 43 days to go until the big vote. How do they think?
Well, he's very different when he's with her. I think he's very relaxed with the First Lady. He's very affectionate. He says that he's funny. She says she's funnier. But then we talked about more serious issues, the foremost of which is, of course, the economy.
Governor Romney on 60 Minutes was asked, does he think it's fair that he pays a lower tax rate than somebody who's making $50,000 a year. And he said, yes, I think it's fair, and I also think that's the way you get economic growth. I've just got a different vision about how we grow an economy. I think, Barbara, that you grow an economy from the middle out, not from the top down.
And with 43 days to go, we asked the President and the First Lady about the future. Win or lose, come election day.
What are you going to do the rest of your life?
Well, you know, first things first. We do have an election ahead. I've got there are all kinds of things I want to do in a second term. Putting folks back to work and making sure our schools are up to snuff, and we've got another war to wrap up. I love teaching. I miss teaching. And, you know, I'm not sure it'll necessarily be in a classroom, but the idea of being able to go around in various cities and helping to create mentorships and apprenticeships and just giving young people the sense of possibility and opportunity.
You know, she should run for office, but she said she doesn't want to.
You know.
I mean, Michelle would be terrific, but temperamentally, I just don't think that.
No, it's absolutely true. It takes a lot of patience to be the president of the United States, and I'm not that patient.
And Diane, he says that he doesn't like to show emotion all through the day. She says she does.
Right. She has said that often about him and herself. And we will all be around the television tomorrow to watch the entire interview with the president and the first lady tomorrow on The View. Thanks so much, Barbara.
Thank you, Diane.
So we'll all be watching. They'll all be watching. There's something interesting about that Michelle Obama clip, though. She doesn't have a lot of patience. She doesn't have a lot of patience. Dare I say angry black woman? Dare I say that? Dare I say that she's just an angry black chick? And if somebody criticized her, that she might lose it at the podium? What you say? Is there quite a possibility there that she would lose herself? That she wouldn't know how to handle it? Don't go into politics, ma'am. Don't. Don't do it to yourself. Keep it moving. You know, go on your healthy initiative. Run around and extort companies. Force them to take salt and trans fats out of their food. Do what it is that you do best. You know, do the running man, the Pee Wee Herman. Go off to schools, do awkward dances with the children. Do that. Those things that we can appreciate and laugh at, do that. I hear now that the cover of Drudge Report, complaints mount against Michelle Obama's new lunch menu. Kids are out there screaming, we are hungry, we are starving.
Where's the beef?
They're out there starving. These poor kids. Because their calorie count has been completely diminished. Students are begging in video. Oh, I got to get this video up. Students beg in video. Please, Michelle, stop doing this to us. We're starving. Oh, wait, hold on. We have a video. Oh, give me a second here.
Hold on. What schools did she put this into play in?
Well, apparently, you know, she's running around the schools telling kids that what it is that they should eat and what they shouldn't eat. But hold on, let's see if we can get this video up.
The story's making me hungry.
Me too. These poor kids, they're starving. They're begging her. Between 2,000 and 5,000, what was it? Active teens require 2,000 to 5,000 calories. School lunch policy mandates all teams receive only 700.
Give me a second, sir. I need to get some food today. My friends are at the corner store getting junk so they don't waste away. My lover ate 2 grams of meat, just about to starve. My bread was taken by some school bully asking about some more. And I know I gave up on food months ago. I know I'm trying to. Yeah, but between the milk and feta cheese, the pains in my tummy sing, you know, I'm trying hard to find nourishment. So if by the time you go to practice and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.
It's a parody of Tonight We Are Young.
Yeah, Tonight We Are Hungry.
Are you kidding me?
What is
this is just awful. I'm sorry, guys. No offense. It's gotten 62,000 views, but apparently they're just ragging on the fact that they can't eat, and the new school mandate is keeping them from eating. What did you expect?
But the new school mandate where? In all schools?
Apparently, this, yeah, well, as the opening in the video states, is that kids need 2,000 to 3,000 calories.
Kids need
2,000 to 5,000, I apologize.
Kids need 2,500 to 5,000 calories a day,
right,
in order to continue to build up their strength and their muscles and sustain all the energy that they exude,
oh, right,
throughout the day.
But they're saying that the new school mandate only requires that they get 750 calories.
Well, your ass better eat some good breakfast and some good dinner, because you ain't getting nothing but a snack at school.
Well, this is sad, though.
And you ain't playing no basketball or no 750 calories.
Well, they're saying that the complaints are mounting. Let me see. This is coming from townhall.com. And they're saying that complaints mount against Michelle Obama's new lunch menu, which in and of itself, I still can't fathom this. It said in Wisconsin, high school athletes are complaining about not getting enough to eat each day due to the skimpy new school lunch menu mandated by the United States Department of Agriculture and First Lady Michelle Obama. Well, what did they think was going to happen? I mean, when she comes into the school, kids seem to be so damn excited.
No, not all the kids are excited. Not everybody loves the freaking Obamas.
Well,
I see her coming and I'm like, shit, hurry up, hide the cheese doodle.
I don't think that I would do that if I saw
her. Actually, I'd probably taunt her with it.
Yeah,
like,
I would.
I got cheese doodles. I got cheese.
Yeah, I don't.
Doodles.
Listen.
And candy. And you can't take.
And look, I don't.
My mama bought it. And the government ain't funding it. And I eat what I want to eat.
I'm not one to comment on the looks or the physique of the First Lady. I've never done it, but you know, I look at Michelle Obama and you know,
she looks like she's the man in the relationship.
Oh, that I wasn't going to suggest that.
Well, I am.
I'm just saying
her grill is effed up.
I wasn't.
She looks like she eats raw broccoli all day.
She probably does. Anyway, I'm just saying that she doesn't look like she's not, you know, she looks like she's had some ribs in her life. You know what I mean? Like, she has them.
And they landed right in her hips and her
in her hips and her rear end. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, the story we published, the townhall.com says, we published earlier this week on that subject is unfortunately not unique. Students across the country are complaining about the new school lunch regulations. Perhaps the real motive is to starve students into slimming down. Just ask students in Pierre, South Dakota, who, too, are in an all-out revolt. I know a lot of my friends, this is someone speaking here, I know a lot of my friends who are just drinking a jug of milk for their lunch, and they are not getting a proper meal. This is coming from a middle school student named Samantha Gortmaker. Despite the fact that the new regulations have increased the cost of a lunch 20 to 25 cents per plate, it's not pleasing students. Well, why would it, folks? It's your parents, it's like the ultimate parent telling you what you have to eat. Some are throwing away their vegetables while others are adapting the rules by becoming industrious. In New Bedford, Massachusetts, students have created a black market for chocolate syrup. The kiddie capitalists are smuggling in bottles of it and selling it by the squeeze, according to SouthCoastToday.com.
I love it.
Nancy Cavolto, director of food services for New Bedford Public Schools, was quoted as saying that hummus and black bean salads have been tough sells in elementary cafeterias.
Hummus?
Yeah, I can't believe it either.
No, stop it. They're not serving hummus.
Yes, they are. That means even
hummus is for, look, listen, Muslim people eat hummus, okay? What is going on?
Wait. Okay, this is the New Bedford Public School director, Nancy Cavalho, I think she says, was quoted as saying that the black hummus and black bean salads have been tough sells in elementary cafeterias. That means even smaller children are going through the day fighting hunger pains, which can never be considered a good thing. One government official tried to put the blame on the students. Wow. Quote, "One thing I think we need to keep in mind as kids say they're still hungry is that many children aren't used to eating fruits and vegetables at home, much less at school. It's a change in what they are eating. If they are still hungry, it's that they are not eating all the food that's being offered." And this is coming from the USDA Deputy Undersecretary Janie Thornton. Thornton just put her finger on the problem. The government is trying to impose a new diet that children are not accustomed to. It's not reasonable to expect them to either eat what the government deems healthy or go hungry. Many will opt to go hungry, and that's the government's fault. And that's according to the report in townhall.com.
What, are they going to start serving falafel next?
It sounds like it to me. Let's bring in Edward in Connecticut. Hello, Edward. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Reese?
This is ridiculous.
Hey, how come is it that everybody can call Michelle Obama angry black negress except for people who disagree with her?
What happened?
Yeah, that's so funny. Because that's what everyone says about her. You're saying, how come everybody can call her the angry black Negro except for the people who don't support her? It's classic.
You know,
she is an angry
well,
black woman.
You know damn well she was giving Barack rabbit punches in the back of the head every time he comes home and eats what he's not supposed to eat, according to her.
You know damn well he's out sneaking around. What was that TV show that the guy would go out sneaking around all the time eating cheesesteaks and shit, and he wasn't supposed to be eating it? Who was that married couple?
But he's not sneaking around. He's doing it right in public.
Oh, yeah, he goes out with Brian Williams from NBC, and he went to, like, to this big burger joint in D.C. during their interview and paid for everybody on the crew. And then he goes out and he has hot dogs and whatnot. And then he went to some other event and said he couldn't have a fried Twinkie. And then she got on the stage stumping for him and then scolded him about it. "You didn't have a fried Twinkie, did you?"
Look, if you can eat a hot dog or a cheeseburger and fries, you better eat a fried Twinkie because it's the same shit.
I was doing that work today.
Oh, sorry. I had a bad day at work today.
Yeah, I know you did. I'm glad that these kids are starving. I'm glad. Because I want them to revolt. I want them to revolt.
Well, what's going to happen is they'll just do away with the school lunch program, and people will start making their kids. I'd rather eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but you probably can't eat that in school now because that's considered racist.
It's racist.
It's racist, yep.
Well, again, I think...
Wait. Now, wait. The peanut butter and jelly sandwich is deemed racist by this kook in Denver.
No.
In Colorado. She was in Colorado.
No. She's in Portland, Oregon.
Is she in Portland,
mm-hmm.
Oregon? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is deemed that it could possibly be racist. What about hummus? I know plenty of American people that eat hummus. I eat hummus. I like hummus. But that's just really recent in the last few years. Hummus is not an American food.
But what they will do is if you don't know about hummus, they'll call you a racist.
This is true. Yeah, if you don't know about hummus, you're a racist. If you're not familiar with the food, like hummus, or like, what's that other one? There's another thing.
Baba ganoush?
Baba ganoush. That's the one. I love that word, too. If you're not familiar with Baba Ganoush, does that mean that you're racist? What is with this? I mean, who brings hummus to the school?
And it can't be good quality hummus, because good quality hummus is expensive.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine somebody bringing in a vat of hummus.
Oh, God. I can't even imagine. And hummus is, you know, if you open up hummus, on the top of it is nothing but oil. It's all made out of chickpeas and oil. So how healthy can that really be?
I don't know.
And do they give them at least a variety of hummus? Do they get, like, garlic tomato hummus or a choice of, you know, some other type of hummus that they make all different flavors. Do they give them a variety of different crackers? I mean, that's something that people in other countries eat on a regular basis. People don't eat that here.
Yeah, it sounds sick.
I'd rather eat a Hot Pocket.
I can go for one of those now. I love me a Hot Pocket. I love a Hot Pocket. I'm crazy about Hot Pockets.
Wow.
I'm actually really crazy about Hot Pockets.
I like Hot Pockets, but Hot Pockets with no meat. I'm not into the mystery meat in the Hot Pockets.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Oh, I love Hot Pockets.
I do cheese only.
Crazy about Hot Pockets. It's a great damn food. It's like all...
You have to eat a Hot Pocket. You know, get one with meat in it. That's part of the fun.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing.
Oh, no. Four cheese Hot Pockets, they're good. Croissant Hot Pockets are better.
Is that what's in there? Four cheese?
Yes.
There's no meat in that thing?
No.
I now hate them. I've only had seven.
You got pepperoni in there. Cut it open and put some pepperoni in there.
Apparently, I'm going to have to now. I'm going to eat me some pepperoni now. I'm going to take a break. I got two other stories I need to get. Stick around with me, man.
Crowfoot as they keep showing their own bigotry by falsely accusing Republicans of bigotry. We conservatives of color get a lot of love in the Republican Party, and the liberals hate it as they flare up like a hot case of herpes.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda.
Now check this out. It would be an insult to me and other conservative compatriots of color if people were giving us favor just because we're black. Just like it's not cool to be treated negatively for skin color, it's not cool to be treated special either because of it. We don't need to be pandered to or showcased.
And it's not because we're better than anybody else, it's because we are everyone else.
Was that like CGI? He looked black, didn't he? What's up with that?
Now, of course, the Republican Party is swinging back, and they are more vocal about the multiple ethnicities that make up the Republican Party, which is good. They should be. But this is due to being put on the defensive by the Democrat Party, who tries to make people prejudiced against the Republican Party by saying that they only allow white people. But the only ones who don't allow non-whites to go into the Republican Party are liberals. Dissenters get cursed by liberals for doing so. If the Republican Party really hated me for my skin color, then there is nothing I could say that could make them have anything to do with me. And if these racist Republicans are still showing me favor despite supposedly hating my ethnicity, then that must mean they're honoring that dream that a certain Martin Luther King had. And despite my ethnicity, I must be saying some real good stuff for them to listen to what I have to say instead of being so focused on hating my ethnicity. Then there's the liberals that are angry with B.B. Winans. B.B. Winans ain't gonna get on Easy Street for singing at the Republican National Convention. He's already well off and a well-known singer. But the liberals accuse him of selling out. No. He risked losing fans. He risked being hated. What do you think he was saying to himself? Oh, goody. I'm gonna do this gig at the convention and I'm gonna be set for life. And this is what cracks me up about liberals and Afrocentrics. They're so ready to accuse somebody for doing something for the money. I've seen B.B. get called a whore and a sellout when he did the gig for free. You liberals have a really sick problem with falsely accusing people, and the only ones trying to punish B.B. for even thinking he's free to sing wherever he wants are liberal Democrats. Or they'll say he's just trying to boost his sales for his CD. Oh my God, that's so evil. He wants to sell his music. Then, of course, when we prove to the liberals that the Republican Party is not void of multiple ethnicities, they cop out and say the Republican Party is just using us. What? Oh, the Democrats don't really use people? Now, y'all know that B.B. is a guy who loves God a little bit, right? And if B.B. is moving away from the Democrat Party, I'm sure it's because of too much of these kind of sentiments within the Democrat Party.
But more to what I want to talk about, I mean, two main points.
You know, he loves this line of our rights come from God and nature, which is so offensive to so much of America, because for black people, Hispanic people, and women, our rights do not come from God or nature. They were not recognized by the natural order of America. They come from the government and from legislation that happens in relatively recent history in America. So that line just bothers me to my core.
Black people, Hispanic people, name me my Christian black and Hispanic people and Catholics. Really? You're going to let this dude tell you that the government is the one who grants you your rights and not God? That government has the power to give what only God can give you? The same government that the black community has been so angry at for denying civil rights? And that would be Democrats, and hopefully more and more they'll start to realize that. Is the government that gives us our rights? Black people, aw. Come on, aw, aw. People of color and women, come on, aw, aw. Most of the black community is God-fearing. But Toure scoffs at the idea that our rights come from God, not government, and I stand by the truth that our rights come from God, not government, but I'm the so-called Uncle Tom, but Toure's okay? Black people, come on, aw, aw. I'm Alfonso Rachel with Zonation, where liberal losers could be real winners with their racist game of Negro spotting. We're mighty multi-ethnic up in here, and it ain't forced, it just is. And thanks again, liberals, for proving again that you're the racist and we're not, and that there are multiple ethnicities within the Republican Party. Kind of hard to play a rousing game of Negro spotting if there's no Negroes to spot, right? Like a hot case of herpes. Aw, aw.
Radio, and we're back, 28 minutes after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Okay, Sal has influenced me to play this audio because I think it would be funny. And look, when I started in the business of radio, with the exception of Rush Limbaugh, one of my favorite guys in the business was, of course, Howard Stern. What I love about Howard Stern is his ability to show stupidity and to make fun of it.
And oh, the stupidity you are about to hear. It's freaking scary.
It is scary. It is scary. It ended up on Drudge Report today. Sal mentioned it to me, but Mary and I watched it, was it Sunday morning?
Yesterday,
Yeah, Sunday morning. This is amazing. They went to Harlem. Howard Stern sent a couple of people out to Harlem to go talk to Obama supporters. And you've got to hear the 7 minutes yourself. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. And what do you like that he's done so far?
I mean, you know, got the Medicaid and all that, the medical thing going. I'm saying he got most of the jobs like he said he was. You know what I'm saying? Like, he really improving, but he need to improve more, so he need to stay on up in so he can do more, you know what I'm saying, things, like he said he would.
Yeah. Do you hope he will eventually find and kill Bin Laden?
He'll eventually do it, though.
You think he'll eventually find him and kill him if he wins this election?
Every person they interviewed, about 10 people.
They didn't know that Bin Laden was there?
I'm telling you, I could play every one of these interviews. They don't know Bin Laden's dead over wherever the hell Sal
and
Richard were.
Well, I don't think this guy knows what day it is.
Yeah, I know. But this woman, I would have thought, this woman sounded very with it. Listen to this.
Do you know who you're going to vote for in this election?
Obama. I just don't like Romney.
What is it about Mitt Romney that you don't like?
Is it that he's pro-choice, or?
Yes, and it's just his general, it's him in general. I just don't like him.
Because he's a Muslim?
Is it because he's pro-choice? And a black woman said, yes, I don't like him because he allows abortion.
He's a Muslim?
It has nothing to do with religion or what his views are. I just don't like him.
Do you think Obama made the right choice by choosing Paul Ryan as his vice president?
Yes.
Do you think he picked Paul Ryan because he's African-American or because he's qualified?
It could be a little bit of both.
Do you think McCain has a shot this time out to beat Obama for this election?
No. I just don't see McCain as presidential material. I don't see it.
What percentage of the vote do you think McCain will get over Obama this time?
About 20, I guess.
If Obama wins this time, are you hoping that we finally catch and kill Osama bin Laden?
Honestly, I don't agree with the whole war thing, but if we, you know.
Do you think he should just go to jail then, bin Laden?
Yeah, he could be tortured, but, you know, I don't believe in killing.
How
long? He could be tortured. He could be tortured, but he shouldn't be killed.
And Obama is against torture, as he put it. These are not real supporters. These kids, that's why when I was listening to this, I'm like, these people aren't real.
And I think that's a white woman.
That's a black woman.
No, I think that's a white
woman. She's a black woman.
How long of a jail term do you think bin Laden should get when we find him?
It should be indefinite.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Wow.
By the way, I'm pretty sure you can find a bunch of white people don't know what's going on either.
Well, they do. You know, again, I told you that Nancy Pelosi's daughter did this documentary of some guys in Mississippi, and they were off the wall, too.
Were they?
Oh, my goodness.
This is some African guy, but you'd expect maybe he doesn't know what's going on.
Are you happy with Obama's vice president pick, Paul Ryan?
He's the best.
Yeah,
this guy's
because,
the best.
Because, you know, Paul Ryan have a lot of issues because of anything the media to him in the TV is not right.
Do you like Obama because he's pro-life? Is that one of the reasons why you would vote for Obama?
Yeah, I like Obama. You know, a lot of issues for the human rights side. And,
like pro-life.
I can't even play the rest of it.
Yeah, I like Obama because he got issues. Pro-life side. He got issues.
Listen, if you haven't heard what it is that I said, you know, I put a thing on MRCTV.org. MRCTV.org called A Message to Black Voters, A Message to Black People. If you look it up, just look up Reese on the Radio. You will definitely find it there. This is exactly what it is that I'm talking about. Now, I know most of these people are just denunts, complete morons. But the bottom line is that what scares me about all this, what frightens the crap out of me with all of this is that these are people who claim to be smart. You ask any one of them, that's the first thing that they'll say in defense of themselves, that they're smart, they're educated, they're not stupid. The truth of the matter is that that part of the electorate is the dumbest.
Your ass ain't even picked up, you ain't picked up a newspaper, you haven't Googled the news.
No.
You haven't watched the news. Because Mitt Romney is a Muslim.
Yeah,
Paul Ryan is Obama's choice for vice president.
And he's black.
And he's black.
That, like, you couldn't be more oblivious.
And you know, and Romney's pro-choice and Obama's pro-life. I mean, come on, idiots. Really, is this what Harlem? Because weren't they in Harlem?
Yeah, this was in Harlem.
Wow, New York. Get your shit together. I'm sad to say that I'm even a New Yorker on this day.
No. Here's the part that I really want everybody to pay attention to. Because it's on the O'Reilly Factor tonight. If you check it out again, it'll be on again at 11 o'clock. Bill O'Reilly is asking whether or not Howard Stern went too far with this piece on his show. Because it showed black people as ignorant. You got to be kidding me to even ask that question. Nobody went too far. People have got to stop dealing with the African-American electorate with kid gloves.
Yeah.
Knock
stupid.
It off.
And that's because, you know what, but this is why black people are so, not all black people, this is why.
So many.
So this is why, actually, and it's not just black people, because white people, I talk to people probably every day about politics. And the amazing things that come out of their mouth. These people have no idea. You know, you want to talk about abortion and Planned Parenthood and blah, 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 blah. You know, I was talking to a colleague the other day, and he's African-American. He had no clue who started Planned Parenthood, why Planned Parenthood was started up, what the purpose of it was. No idea. He says to me, I'm going to have to look into that. Well, great. If I taught him something,
well, yeah,
and if I made him look something up, you know, then that's my good deed for the day. great. I love it. But there's so many people, not just black, not just Spanish, not just white. There's so many people out there that are so ignorant to what is truly going on. I don't even think that it's a race thing anymore. It's just pure ignorance. Ignorance is bliss in this country today.
I got to see this later on to do. Roseanne and Hannity are talking now. I plan to jip it, but I'm not going to. This was perfect for people to hear, and the fact that it's getting so much attention is what it is that I love even more. Because now what I think more Americans need to see is that there are people out there who just do not know and who are absolute idiots who are going to run out there and vote. And, you know, there's another video. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. And Dennis and Edward, you guys are back up. I don't know if you guys saw this video. There was a video on YouTube back in the 2008 election where they got these people online at the polling places on November 6th, and they were talking to people about certain quotes from the president and certain policies, and they asked ridiculous questions like, who was the politician who said that they can see Russia from their house? Everybody knew Sarah Palin, but didn't know it was Tina Fey who said it. Another question they asked was, do you know the president's policy on abortion? And they didn't know. Which candidate has a daughter who had a child out of wedlock? Oh, they knew it was Sarah Palin. So it was like, you know, these are supposed to be the brightest people in the world going out and trying to elect President Obama, but were completely clueless. And they didn't just ask blacks. I think that out of the group, they asked maybe three black people. The majority of the people there were white.
Absolutely. You know what? White people.
The video was called, if you type it to either Google or YouTube, How Obama Got Elected.
Yes.
And
it
will come
exactly
up.
Exactly it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even white people that voted for Obama, they probably weren't voting for him because they wanted, you know, because they agree with his policies or they knew what his policies were, or they knew anything about him. They were voting for him because they felt that themselves and their ancestors owed something to black people.
Well, you're saying white guilt.
Yes.
You believe it was just white guilt?
That some people believed in change because I didn't vote for him because I felt like I owed black people anything because I don't owe anybody a damn thing. I ain't own no damn slaves. If my people did, well, I'm sorry that they did, but, you know, that shit ain't on me. I don't owe anybody anything. This is a totally different day and age, and I wasn't raised in those times. So I had nothing to do with that. Just because I came from them doesn't mean that I'm a part of that.
Go ahead, Edward.
It's also because some of these white people wanted to see a historic event and be part of a historic event. The first African-American, even though it's really Kenyan-American, voted into office.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. I think people wanted to be a part of a movement. They can say that, you know, they were there. You know, we voted in the first African-American president to the United States. They sort of had that sort of added sort of bonus of saying that, look, we have as a country have changed racially, or that racial divide is now changed. But isn't...
And they can tell all their black friends or all all the black people that they work with or anybody else, or if a black person ever says anything to them, they can say, hold up, I'm not racist. I voted for Barack Obama.
I will give you a direct quote from some liberal cracker I worked with about a couple of years ago. He decided to work the polls that day in November. And what he said was, he's never done this in life. I asked him why he wanted to do it this year in particular. Because I want to see the old black ladies cry when Obama is elected, and I could tell my grandchildren I was there at this event. Not because he thought Obama would be better than McCain, but because he wants to see the poor old black ladies cry and the tears come down her eyes.
Yeah, but you know what? See that election for me, in honesty, that entire time I watched the election, I consider that election the most selfish I've ever seen a group of people. because it wasn't about the country. It was all about themselves.
Absolutely.
It was all about themselves, what they wanted for themselves, what they were going to be able to say for themselves, what they achieved. This was so personal to them that, you know, in the grand scheme, it was an absolute departure from God and country in that one election.
In hindsight,
you
know, maybe Obama being voted in needed to happen to open the country's eyes.
I agree.
You know, because
I agree.
I would have, you know, never got, I mean, it wasn't, you know, just you that got me into the, you know, I'm more involved in politics now because of Reese, but definitely had been taking a look at things prior to, because of the way that our country, because of the direction our country is moving in. And maybe
I would hold
just
that thought until November, Mary.
What happened?
I would hold that thought until November.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, because then we'll know if we have learned from the past 4 years or not. Because it was said years ago when Kerry was running, God forbid if he gets elected, but one of these days it's going to happen like a ton of bricks on us, and that ton is Barack Obama. So if we say that we needed to have that wake-up call, have we been waking up yet? I would hold that until November to see if that thought comes true or not.
Well, I believe that what we are going to witness this coming election, if we haven't realized it yet, because I believe, honestly, I believe that the polls are skewed, and I had this conversation, we had this conversation with Sal last week, that I believe that the polls are skewed. I believe that these polls are skewed. I believe that it's all bull. But there's one thing that I know, in an ideological way, that it is going to be absolutely shown. The curtain will finally fall on the difference in this country ideologically. And what I mean by that is, it's not just about the people who vote for President Obama. It will be the way certain individuals, talking heads, pundits, what these people will say and do in the event that Mitt Romney wins this election. Because I will watch the people over at MSNBC cry on television, without a doubt.
I saw that on Fox 4 years ago when the election was finally called for Obama. Juan Williams had a meltdown. He was crying. I taped the thing. He was so happy that Barack Obama won the election. And he spoke as a black man.
Now,
I don't know if you
what?
Saw that
well,
4 years ago.
Well,
I
did Jesse Jackson also cried during that election as well.
Who did?
Jesse Jackson.
Yes, but that's right. He was in Chicago.
Oprah Winfrey. Was hysterical. I cried when I went to vote. I voted for him. And I cried when I went to the poll.
Wow.
I cried when McCain lost.
Yeah, I cried too.
I cried at the poll, and I cried when he won.
I will honestly.
And you would have cried too if the Black Panthers had beat the shit out of you in Philadelphia trying to vote.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? No, no. See, but the thing about this is that MSNBC guys like Chris Matthews, he's going to cry and then become irate. Guys like Keith Olbermann.
Oh,
God,
he's
going to
start
going.
Acting like Bill Belichick was acting last night, like a sore loser.
That's exactly. Torre will scream that everybody who voted against Obama is racist, and Mitt Romney got him.
I wonder where the thrill will go up what part of his body next.
Oh, he won't get a thrill. If anything, there'll be a pain in his ass. that's what it'll be when it comes to Chris Matthews. In the event that Obama loses. But again, look, I still deal with the same way as I said to Sal in Mass. The bottom line is this, is that if you've got an incumbent president who's tied in the polls with a candidate who's virtually unknown according to everybody else, nobody seems to know who Mitt Romney is. He needs more name identity, you know, and this guy's still running neck and neck with Obama. The bottom line is this. You're going to lose.
He is going to lose because there's not enough boils on the ass of humanity like these people in Manhattan that are going to vote for Obama that's going to make him win over Romney. There's no way that Obama is going to be the president again for the next 4 years. And unfortunately, as tragic as that would be, I don't even know if I don't know if he would be safe being the president again for the next 4 years.
I don't know about safe. But
I mean, I'm not making
exactly
any claims to any threats or anything, but I'm just saying, you know, the country has had enough. I mean,
I agree. I have absolutely.
Reese, I got a question for you.
Sure.
And the question would be, if Howard Stern went to a dumbass white community, would he get the same response? I think so.
He definitely would.
If you look at
it, and I don't mean any white community. I'm talking about one that's socially and economically stupid.
Hey, Dennis, if you listen to the whole, tape or recording, he actually says that in the recording that he's a bunch of dumbass white people.
Right, that was my
point.
Because they mentioned Nancy Pelosi's daughter who did that thing in Mississippi. But here's my statement about that, and this is what I believe, and this is gonna sound partisan and anti-black, but this is a fact. I don't care what anybody says. African Americans have this tendency to do one thing that annoys the crap out of me, in an effort to
eat chitlins.
Yeah, that too, Dennis. In an effort
to say
to
one thing is not
yeah, well,
accurate.
No. In an effort to appear smart, will answer any question posed to them even when they don't know the answer. You rarely get that from white people who are poor.
But
because,
that's why.
Because more white people are prone to say, I don't know much about that. Because they would fight, you know, you can deem a white person stupid by what they don't know. You ever heard of such and such and such? Nah, I ain't never heard of that. What's that? You hear that more from white people. Nah, I ain't never heard of that. What's a bidet? What you talking about? Inconsequential? What do you mean you get that word from? I ain't never heard that word before.
What's that filet mignon?
Yeah, what's that filet mignon? A filet what?
Well, then would you have heard a white woman say like the black one did 4 years ago, I don't have to pay my bills anymore. Obama's
exactly.
The president. No more paying the mortgage. You're going to get me a new car. There goes my house. Ba-ba-ba-dip-ba-dip.
Right, but see, but black people in this argument always have to appear to be smart. So the essence is, don't say I don't know. You have to know something in their realm, because if they don't know, they appear stupid. So answer every question posed to them, even if you sound like a raging lunatic.
Yeah, I think maybe a white person is more, and for whatever reason, I don't know what the reason is, tends to, you know, be more like, okay, yeah, I'm stupid to what you're saying, but I'm going to say that I'm stupid to what you're saying because
I'll
admit
it.
I'll
admit
it.
It's humility.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's humility. And that's the problem with this, is that here it is, you're asking these people a question.
And it's more like, I think most white people, it's more like, you know, well, I ain't never going to be where you at anyway, so I don't care. No, I don't know.
Can I embark on you, literally, I need to tug your ear on this. This is a great story. So at one particular point when I was sitting in jail, I was at the Manhattan Detention Center, and there was this white guy, older guy. He had real, real thick glasses, real thick dark-rimmed glasses. He had white hair, right? He was involved with embezzlement or some junk like that. He had a real, real white-collar crime, and he was being extradited back to Detroit. So he and I were pretty cool for a little while. We talked, you know, we communicated all the time, because me, I just couldn't deal with ignorance, so I'd talk to anybody who was intelligent enough. So he and I communicated for a little while and conversed. And then we're sitting around, we're watching Jeopardy or whatever it is. And then I remember getting to a conversation with a young black kid there, and somebody had mentioned that I was a conservative, I was a Republican or whatever. And someone started to challenge me. So I start getting into this argument or this debate with the young black kid and a couple of people around there who believe what it is that they believe because they're from the ghetto. So every time I come out with a fact, every black kid who I was talking to, looked at the white guy sitting next to me, who they knew I was friends with.
As to confirm.
To confirm
to
what
put
it is
a
that
stamp
I had to
of
say.
Approval.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said, and it was funny because every time they did it, I said, after a while, I got sick of it, and I just turned around and I just said, and if you believe that, I'll even tell you such and such and such and such, and if you don't believe me, go confirm it with the white man. which only proves to you, a nigga can't know nothing. And when a nigga knows something, the only way that you can believe him is to get a white man to approve it. What does that say about you?
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, that's...
Does that tell you that racism really is alive in the black community? And when I mean racism, I'm talking about the self-hatred and lack of self-esteem.
Yeah,
and where does that come from? Does it come from the great society which allowed welfare to force the black male out of the homes?
No, that's not why.
The most vicious racists are blacks these days.
You're absolutely right. Here's what the problem is. The truth of the matter is, and I talked about this last week, is this whole idea where you have African-American people every day telling their young ones that you can't do that. You can't achieve. You're not smart enough. You won't be accepted.
They don't even have to say
that.
Where
does that come from, though? What's the root of that?
They don't even say that. I've heard this, and it hurts my heart. They don't even say, like, you can't do this. You're not smart enough. You can't do that because you're black.
Right, because the white man won't let you.
The white man's not going to let you. You can't do that, boo. Because, you know, the white man is keeping us down.
Right, the white man...
Then is that the reason why when a black conservative gets appointed to a high position, either in the Supreme Court or in the cabinet, that liberals have a fit because it destroys the myth?
Right.
Or destroys their feeling of a self-denigration?
Exactly. It destroys the myth that somebody could be a free thinker and could ascend to that role. In any way, we have to diminish that. And that's what liberals did when it came to Clarence Thomas.
Black people more than anybody.
Look at what they did to Herman Cain.
I know.
That means it's a perfect
Herman
example.
Cain, they let Herman, they, I mean, what they did to him, they, he just gave up. He threw in the white towel.
Well,
To cover the problem, they will say, well, you know, they got their high position because they're partly white or they're Uncle Toms or they bought a Massa.
But hold on. I want to make this final point
about Herman Cain. Black people were saying that's what you get for messing around with them damn white women.
Yeah, that's exactly. And he's married to a black woman. Here's what I find interesting, because – what was so scary about that thing that happened at Manhattan Detention Center was that what I said to them in essence after all of that was, and I said, here it is that each and every one of you will sit here publicly and denounce the white man. The white man's the devil. The white man's evil. The white man's this. The white man's tricky. All that other stuff. But in order for you to get your approval, you seek the white man. Then I brought out this almanac. It's called Scott's Almanac. And this is from 2008. I can't find this particular book anywhere. And if anybody finds it, please let me know where I can find it because I have to buy it. Scott's Almanac is from Britain. It's just like any other, you know, American almanac, but this came from Britain. But what it's got is obscure facts and studies. When I showed them in this almanac, it asked Latinos and blacks who they discriminated against the most. And whites were pretty much the subtext of this. It turns out that blacks distrust whites at a greater level than they distrust Hispanics. Hispanics distrust blacks more than they distrust whites. When asked who you'd rather do business with, blacks and Hispanics universally chose whites. Overwhelming.
Some bad news for you, Reese.
Yeah.
Short's Almanac is no longer published.
I know. I can't. But the 2008 one was the one I'm trying. I heard Short's Almanac.
Only between 6 and 10.
Say again?
They only published it between 2006 and 2010.
Yeah, I knew. Yeah, 2010, I think, was the last one. I'm looking for the 2008 one. That one was an amazing book. I got the next year, but they made it, I think it was the 2010 Almanac. It must have been 2009 that I had. 2009 I had, and sorry, 2009 I had and 2010. The 2009 one I lost, but the 2010 wasn't as good as 2009. The 2009 one was amazing.
Yeah, I did read a recent article of about that study, and I'll send it to you tonight. I have it bookmarked somewhere in my my Outlook somewhere. I'll send it to you.
Oh, please do, man. It was that was one of my favorite things I read in there, talking about. And again, to me, I think it breaks down. I think it truly breaks down the racial divide in this in this country about, you know, that kind of prejudice. That's why I say what Howard Stern did was brilliant.
I think Amazon has it on sale.
How much?
Well, 10 new from $20.06 and 43 used from 2 cents. But that's the 2009 edition.
Wait, they say they have used ones for how much?
From 2 cents up. You know,
I'll take a used one.
Yeah.
As long as it's not
and then,
right.
And then they have hardcover from $1.82 to unknown binding, $115.20. You figure it out.
How is it unknown binding?
How do I know? It's unknown. I'm supposed to guess.
That one just sounds weird in and of itself.
That's what it said. Hardcover, new from $1.82, used from 30 cents. Hardcover on 17 November 2008, new from $20.06 and used from 2 cents. And then unknown binding, $115.20.
I'm telling you, that 2009 edition was so – it was one of – I mean, it's still one of my favorite things to read. It was so, so good. But I'm definitely going to get it now. Now that I know that I can get it on Amazon, I'm just going to get it. Because the stats in there are – they're the best.
And knowing all the money that you make off the exploited white people, I know you'll go for the unknown binding edition.
Yes, the unknown binding edition. Hey, which, by the way, can somebody tell me and send me an email to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com? Apparently, game coming up with New England versus St. Louis, I think it is, but it's at an undisclosed neutral state, place. They're not playing in St. Louis and they're not playing in New England. They're playing in a neutral stadium. I'd love to know where the hell this is. But I've never heard of that. Are they playing in England?
Penn State?
They were supposed to be playing in London, weren't they?
I hope it's not at Penn State.
Weren't they supposed to be playing in England this year?
You might be right. I think they are going to. I think they might be going to England. They say it's a neutral site. But I don't know where it is. I haven't seen anything, but I'm going to look it up tonight and try to find
out. Because the UK seems to have a lot of NFL football fans lately. It's growing.
What's that? What's that last part?
The UK seems to have a lot of football fans for the NFL for the past few years.
Yeah. Wow. You're absolutely right. All right. Well, that's our show for this
Monday.
What
the hell do I know about football?
Tonight, sir, folks, we will be back. Thank you, Edward. Thank you, Dennis. And South Deep.
Reese, it is in London.
It is in London.
Yeah, it says NFL London 2012, St. Louis Rams versus New England Patriots.
Oh, okay, all right, cut it off. All right, folks, we'll see you tomorrow on the radio.
Yes. So much for, there we go. Now it's